As Wes said, our reading this lunchtime can be found on page 5. We're reading from Genesis chapter 6, beginning at verse 1 on page 5. When man began to multiply on the face of the land, and daughters were born to them, the sons of God saw that the daughters of man were attractive, and they took as their wives any they chose. Then the Lord said, "My spirit shall not abide in man forever, for he is flesh. His days shall be 120 years. The Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and also afterwards, when the sons of God came in to the daughters of man, and they bore children to them. These were the mighty men who were of old, the men of renown. The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him to his heart. So the Lord said, "I will blot out man whom I have created from the face of the land, man and animals and creeping things and birds of the heavens, for I am sorry that I have made them." But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord.
Thank you, Jono, very much indeed for reading for us. Our subject this lunchtime is something that we all like to speak about, ourselves. You may have heard of the celebrity, rather self-conscious, of talking too much about themselves. That's enough about me, let's talk about you. Tell me, what do you think about me? This second block of teaching in the book of Genesis is introduced in chapter 5, verse 1, where it begins with the statement, "This is the book of the generations of Adam." Adam, a Hebrew word simply meaning humanity or mankind. So our subject this week, as it was last, is ourselves. Who are we? What is humanity? I wonder how you would answer that question. Our contention is, however, not that this is simply another exercise in anthropology or sociology. This isn't an Attenborough-esque observation exercise with research photographers embedded in hides delivering human conclusions on Homo sapiens. For the book of Genesis, read on its own terms, does not purport to be merely a human document. It holds out that it is God's word. And so Genesis chapter 5 verse 1, "This is the book of the generations of Adam." This is God's analysis following his research. This is what he makes of the data. "Let me tell you about humanity," says God. "Do you want to know a thing about yourself?" says God. "Here is a voice from outside, an objective view. Come into my consultancy room and let me deliver my prognosis," says God. This weekend we had with us at St. Helens the former principal of Moore Theological College, who is also the Archbishop of Sydney, Dr. Peter Jensen. He asked me very kindly, "What are you speaking about on Tuesday lunchtime at the business service?" And I said, "Well, I'm speaking on humanity." And he recounted to me a conversation he had with Professor Donald Hay, one-time Professor of Economics at Jesus College, Oxford, and then the first head of social sciences in Oxford, and Peter described him as one of the 6 wise men who governed Oxford University back in 2005. And Donald Hay said to Peter Jensen, when speaking about the issue of humanity, "This is the most significant question facing the Western world today. Who are we?" course, the progressive, the utopian, believes in the perfectibility of man. And God's analysis is somewhat different. So there is God's analysis there in chapter 6, verse 5. Let me read it to you, and this is where we're going to spend the bulk of our time. The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. So in this second block of material, laying out for us God's analysis of humanity, we saw last week, here's the first thing we need to know about ourselves. Verse 8, he died. Verse 11, he died. Verse 14, he died. Verse 17 of chapter 5, he died. Verse 20 of chapter 5, he died. 27, he died. 31, he died. If our worldview, the way we see the world and understand life, has not yet got within it something that enables us to handle the reality of death, then the way we think about the world and see life is inadequate. But today, that was last week, today, if our worldview, if our grasp on humanity does not yet have within it something to deal with the truth of verse 5 of chapter 6, the evil of the human heart, the wickedness of man, then our worldview is inadequate. Well, we're going to spend the bulk of our time on verse 5, but I'm well aware that chapter 6, verses 1 to 4, raises all sorts of questions, and I thought I would just touch on that before we move into verse 5. So in verse 2, we find the sons of God intermarrying with the daughters of man. Who these male interlopers are is not altogether clear. The majority view is that they're some sort of heavenly being. Second letter of Peter and the letter of Jude hint at that. And the fact is, we can't be absolutely clear. What does seem to be the case from chapter 6, verses 1 to 4, is that God does not approve either of the woman's family allowing such intermarriage or of the sons of God engaging in the practice. And therefore, you will see he limits the average upper span of humanity's life to 120 years, there in verse 3. What also appears clear is that the offspring of these union are the mighty men of old, otherwise known as the Nephilim, and all of this is profoundly hazy. It seems to me there's little point engaging in endless speculation. We're talking about prehistory. We've only been given the bare bones. But most ancient mythical accounts, which Genesis does not purport to be, have it that in the earliest days, before what we know as Homo sapiens was firmly established, there were gargantuan humanoid figures, a kind of Jonah Lomu plus. One author suggests this. Could it be that instead of the author of Genesis transforming myth into history, as is frequently suggested, that some ancient accounts presented history as myth? In other words, it's just as reasonable to suggest that the ancient myths and legends had their roots in something that was essentially true, and that there was some hybrid humanoid figures before the emergence and dominance of Homo sapiens. Well, that brings us to our key verse. I'm afraid that's the best I can do. And if you were hoping for more than that, you're not going to get it from me. And I want to spend the rest of our time looking at verse 5. Let's look at God's verdict. The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Well, as I said at the start, I'm well aware that this analysis flies right in the face of the general view of humanity that we will find in any of the sociology or philosophy departments of our universities. Indeed, it flies in the face of the television studios and the editorial offices of our mainstream media. For the post-colonial progressive of the late 20th century currently rules the roost. And therefore, the prevailing view of humanity held by humanity is that whilst there may be one or two exceptions where particularly wicked or evil individuals largely through social conditioning, develop rogue tendencies, for the vast majority of men and women, people like you and me, the essential verdict is pretty decent. Yeah, we have the occasional blip. We all have our demons. We all have our dark moments. But in the round, when considered as a whole, beta plus. Solid 2-2 material. Maybe not premiership or even championship, but at least first division and certainly not Vauxhall or football conference. And that would be described as the progressive world view. I've quoted before from a 60-second interview with Ben Elton taken a number of years ago. What is your view of humanity? Quote, Ben Elton, I believe that the sum total of good outweighs the sum total of evil, despite evidence to the contrary. People tend to be familiar with the French philosopher Jean-Jacques Rousseau and his opening statement in The Social Contract, man was born free and everywhere is in chains. Or his discourse on inequality right in the final pages, man is naturally good, I believe I have demonstrated it. In the round, beta plus. And therefore the progressive worldview has it that if we give them enough education, enough financial banking, enough sufficient social improvement, humanity will come out with a decent report. And that is not God's analysis of the situation. And it's not God's analysis of you. And it's not God's analysis of me. The Lord saw that the wickedness of man, humanity, was great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. We need to be clear that when God uses the word evil and wicked, he does not necessarily mean what we have reserved for those two words to mean in the 21st century. We speak of people being evil and wicked, and we're referring to the religious fanatic in the Middle East, or a child sex offender, or a mass murderer. He is evil personified. God, however, is not suggesting that all people are as wicked and evil as they could be. That is not the doctrine of human depravity. He is, however, telling us that humanity is not essentially good. That every thought and every attitude and every action of yours and mine is tainted with evil. And that we cannot examine any deed without finding, even in the most altruistic of acts, that there is within it some aspect of self-glorification, self-gratification, self-promotion. Look again at the verse, and you will see that the verdict of God is universal. God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth. Look again at the verse, and you'll see that the verdict of God is personal, that every intention of his heart was only evil continually. And look again at the verse, and you will see that the verdict is internal. Every intention of the thoughts of his heart. And so were God to have one of those helicopter-mounted television cameras, the kind that Attenborough uses for filming the wild dogs hunting on the Serengeti Plain, well, he would pan over the whole continent of Asia. It would move northwest into the whole of Europe, and then west again over the whole of the Americas. And God's verdict on humanity, the wickedness of man is great in the earth. Now, might I suggest that this does tie in with the evidence that is presented to us on the news and in our newspapers and on the websites, does it not? I don't think we need to spend too much time on this, for whether it's the Madras spreading Eastern violence or the sweatshop fueling Western greed or human trafficking or the sex trade or economic and political corruption or environmental desecration. We have to agree, don't we, that the wickedness of humanity on the earth is very great indeed. But then the camera zooms in, as these cameras do, and down into the southeast of England and focuses on a single street in the suburbs and picks out one home in Sevenoaks or Chelmsford or whatever and pans into the front room or the Christmas family gathering around the kitchen at the dining room table. And things start to get personal as the individual acts in the life account of each inhabitant is examined. The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of his heart was only evil continually. And then, in a moment of profoundly unsettling technological innovation, the camera not only goes into the heart, but you see the verse, the thoughts of the heart. And displayed on the video monitor are the thoughts of each family member, even as the presents are opened, or difficult great Aunt Agatha is greeted, or the in-laws are welcomed. So you see, God isn't just interested in a sort of bland, lacking in detail, general statement here. Yes, there's the generality, universal, but there's also the specificity, the heart, and the particularity, the thoughts of the heart. And I don't know about you, but were I the subject of that divine camera, as God looks into the thoughts of my heart, I wouldn't have a leg to stand on for this morning, let alone this last week, and certainly not Christmas lunch. Well, before we close, what I want to do is to place this one verse in its context in Genesis as a whole. But before I do that, might I not suggest that this verdict ties in with the way our world is? This is foundational stuff. This is, in fact, module 2 in God's theological treatise for humanity. Module 1, chapters 1 to 4. Module 2, chapter 5, 1 to 6, 8. What is man? This is the most fundamental question facing the Western world today, Professor Donald Hay. Let's look at the evidence generally. God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth. The progressive argues that humanity is essentially good, beta plus. Offer liberal democracy to the world, and the world will embrace what is good because we're essentially pretty decent. And so one finds the liberal progressive in the central squares of the globe, cheering on the liberation and advance of the Arab Spring. Only good can come. They'll embrace it. And when halted, the progressive argues, well, more education, more finance, more medical and social advance, enough exposure to the decent beta plus morality of liberal democracy, and humanity will win through. You know, as we sat in my study, Peter Jensen, we were sort of chatting about this, and he just said to me, "And you've got a computer on your desk." And I looked rather blank. So much pleasure, so much evil. The computer. Warming to the subject, I replied, "And we can split the atom. Atom." And he answered, "And we can travel freely across the borders and communicate widely." Now, here in the city, we don't need to be reminded of this, but is it not true that we have experienced advancement in the city beyond anything imagined 20 years ago? Look at some of you oldies. I'm trying not to look anywhere in particular, but would you have imagined it 20 years ago? And what has been needed? Regulation. Beyond anything expected 20 years ago. Why? Oh, because the evil of man's heart is beyond anything you can imagine. So I believe that the sum total of good in humanity outweighs the sum total of evil, despite evidence of the contrary. Man is essentially good. I believed it. I proved it. Well, perhaps you better get back to module 2 of God's theological treatise. Back to key stage 1, primary school, shall we? As we begin to get real, we will become less gullible, naive, and infantile in our thinking. But then there's the individual and the personal. The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil. Continue. Do you know this is an analysis that is repeated throughout the Bible? So that in chapter 8, if you just turn the page, after the flood, chapter 8, verse 21, when the Lord smelt the pleasing aroma, the Lord said in his heart, I will never again curse the ground because of man, for the intention of man's heart is evil from his youth. Do you know that's an analysis that is repeated by Jesus? Jesus speaking to the Pharisees, you, though you are evil. And in John's Gospel, this is the verdict, light has come into the world, that people love darkness rather than the light because their works were evil. And in John chapter 7, the world cannot hate you, but it hates me because I testify that its deeds are evil. Just before Christmas, we asked a whole group of friends to one of our carol services, and many of them came. They were more or less, all of them, schooled in the prevailing ideology of the progressive. They'd been brought up in that doctrine. And I asked one of them, I mentioned this at the carol service, at the end of the carol service, over dinner, I said, would you actually take one of these gospels that we've given? They came back to our house, and would you read it? And he very honestly, he's a very brave man, he honestly said, I'm frightened what I might find. I'd rather not. So I said to him, because I tend to be a bit too confrontational at moments like this, what are you going to say to God on the day of judgment when he asks you why you didn't even bother to read about his son who came into the world in the first century to die for your sin? And he replied like this. I like to think that life is like a sheer rock face. And I like to feel that by my fingertips, I am just clinging on. And come the day of judgment, I will have done just enough. So I said to him, what do you think the standards are? He said, and he began to laugh, do you know, I've no idea. And so I said, do you know the Ten Commandments, any of them? And then, by then, he was laughing openly because he realized the absurdity of it. I don't. Not one? No, I can't name one of them. And we were laughing so much at that stage that I asked him if I might use him as an illustration in a talk like this because I was preparing to speak on Genesis 5. The absurdity of it. That you can claim that you're essentially beta plus. First division. Oh, not Vauxhall Conference. When you don't actually know the standards in the eyes of the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. Jesus said, out of the heart of men come all these evil things. Theft. Murder, that is hatred of others. Deceit. Sensuality, that is an extreme love of pleasure. Envy, that is wanting somebody else's pay packet or job, or slander, that is gossip, malice, pride, sexual immorality, that is sleeping with somebody who is not your wife or husband. May I say, when it comes to my own life, I find Genesis 6, verse 5 describes me perfectly. And that then leaves the very big question about the prospects for humanity. And for that, we'll have to come back next week for Module 3. Shall I tell you the fascinating thing? In Module 2, we've seen that humanity faces death, every single one of us, and God's analysis of us is that the thoughts of our heart are only evil continually. But in Module 2, you have Enoch, who, if you like, defeats death. And in Module 2, you have Noah. And Noah's name means relief, rest. Just have a look at chapter 5, verse 29, and this will prove a trailer for next week. God called Lamech's son, Noah, saying, out of the ground that the Lord has cursed, this one shall bring us relief from our work and from the painful toil of our hands. And so even buried in this analysis of our human heart is a hint at God's solution. And if you come back next week, we'll be able to look at it in much more depth. Let me close in prayer. Father in heaven, we thank you for your verdict on us and your analysis of us. Please guard and protect us from burying our head in the sand or trying to sidestep the reality of what you know to be true. We thank you for this prospect of hope, of salvation that Noah points towards. But first we ask that you would expose us for what we are and enable us then to come to you for mercy. For your name's sake. Amen.